The following is a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
And would you open your Bibles, please, to Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4. We've been out of this the last few weeks. I'm grateful for Bob and Joe filling in while I was gone. But we want to return this morning to our study of this great practical book, this instruction manual on how to live wisely unto God, this book that is essentially a primer on wisdom and how it is that we are to be those kind of people that want to know and honor the Lord in following His way. Solomon understands this. Solomon understands that there are a variety of competing voices that we are going to be faced with on a regular basis. And two opportunities, essentially, for us to live a certain way on every day. We can either choose wisdom and honor the Lord, or we will choose folly and follow that path. And Solomon's point throughout Proverbs is reject folly and pursue wisdom. Solomon wants us to understand that it is in our best interest to follow God's ways. It is in our best interest to reject folly. It is in our best interest to spare ourselves the regret that comes from following sin and following the ways of the world and engaging in the things that this world entices us with. And so Solomon is preaching to us through this book the importance of wisdom. And we said that wisdom is the skill of living rightly under God. God has created a moral order within the universe, within our world, within our society. He has created a moral order, a way that He has designed us to live and designed us to operate, and it's in our best interest to make sure that we are those who follow God's instructions. And so Solomon wants us to be those kind of people. He wants us to be those kind of people who are dominated by a right understanding of ourselves and a right understanding of God, and to think God's thoughts after Him. And only when we do that are we able to live successfully. As you know by now, we have been working our way through these opening 9 chapters of Proverbs, and we have said a number of times that they are a compendium of Solomon's discussions with his son. It's as if his son has gotten to a point where he's old enough now to start wrestling through and thinking through these things on his own. And so he sits his son down for one of those very important father-son talks. You understand that, dads? He looks his son in the eye. He maybe puts his hands on his son's shoulders and he says, "Son, I want you to listen to me. And I want you to make choices that are going to honor the Lord, and you're going to choose wisdom before you become a fool. Before you engage in enough decisions that will bring you harm and regret, I want you to understand the importance of making wise choices when it comes to your life." Essentially, we could wrap up the message of Proverbs in this phrase: pursue wisdom at all costs. Whatever it costs you, no matter what it takes, make sure that you're going to be the person who's going to pursue wisdom at all costs, because it is in your best interest to reject folly and to embrace God's wisdom. And so over the last few weeks, we've been looking at these various lectures, 10 of them. Solomon gives his son 10 lectures, 10 sermons, as it were, to convince him of the importance of choosing wisdom over folly. We've seen 3 of these already, and this morning we come to the 4th and the 5th lecture of Solomon to his son in Proverbs chapter 4. What's interesting about this chapter is that the focus of the home and the focus of the family becomes increasingly important. We've seen already his conversations with his son. This morning we're going to see in full living color that wisdom ought to be a family tradition. Wisdom is designed by God to be passed on from generation to generation within the home, within the father, son, mother, daughter, family relationship, parents and children. God has designed that environment to be the place where there is a cycle of wisdom that is to be repeated. There is to be a tradition of imparting godly wisdom in the home. God has designed parents to be those who faithfully pass on God's wisdom to their children, to impart to them godly instructions. It's the place where they are to learn the first principles of wisdom in the context of the relationship between parents and children. So God has designed dad and mom. Parents, he's designed you to be the primary instruments through which this wisdom is passed on to your children. In particular, though, God has designed dads to do this. God, in his infinite wisdom, has specifically called fathers to the mighty and the noble task of passing on this kind of wisdom to their children. That doesn't mean, moms, you're exempt from that by any means. You're a key part of that. But as you're going to see in Proverbs chapter 4, dads are the ones who are tasked by the Lord primarily to bear this massive responsibility and privilege of passing on and pointing their children to the wisdom that God has given us in the Scriptures. So dads, you need to listen up today. This sermon is for you. It's for you moms as well, because you have a vital role in this process, but you're going to see this morning that dads are particularly critical in the development of the wisdom of their children. God has designed the home to be a place where there is a cultivation of spiritual wisdom passed on from parents to children. This is the way it is. God has designed it this way. Psalm 78, God told Israel to do this. He says, he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should teach them to their children, that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and tell them to their children. This is the way God designed it in the nation of Israel, that they were to be a place, they were to be a people, they were to have homes where wisdom was passed on from father to son, from parents to children. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And you'll see that God has designed it that way. And as you walk along the wayside and as you plan these times specifically, this is how God has designed wisdom to be passed on. Come to the New Testament. It's the same thing. Ephesians 6, verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Dads, you have the primary responsibility for this. Moms, you're not exempt. In fact, moms, you're oftentimes the ones who are doing this even more than dad is, because you're the ones who are oftentimes home more with the kids. You're the ones shepherding the heart. You're the ones caring for them. You're the ones teaching. You're the ones disciplining. It's often the moms who bear the brunt of this, but dads, you carry the responsibility. It is your task to ensure that this is taking place in your home, because God never intended wisdom just to be something that you learn through the school of hard knocks. There are some people who only learn that way. Maybe you've met some of them. You teach them and you train them and you instruct them and you tell them all you can about God's ways, and yet they don't learn it until they do it themselves, until they get out on their own, and then they start to learn these things because the circumstances they're in and the experiences they have begin to teach them these things the hard way. But that's not how God designed it. God has designed wisdom to be passed along into the home where there's a chain of tradition, where moms and dads carry this responsibility out in their home. This is the scene here in Proverbs chapter 4. It's a marvelous scene. It's a wonderful picture of a devout home where mom and dad are sitting down with their kids, and dad in particular is sitting in the midst of his children, instructing them and teaching them and being the conduit through which God's wisdom comes to bear upon the life of his children. And so this morning, we want to look at verses 1 to 19. There are actually three sermons by Solomon in this chapter. The fourth, fifth, and sixth ones are contained here in this fourth chapter. We're just going to look at the next two, the fourth and the fifth lectures, which are verses 1 to 19. I want you to follow along as I just read the first couple verses, and then we'll dive into it here in just a moment. Solomon says, "Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. or I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. I want you to notice that this lecture begins the exact same way that the other lectures have begun. You remember back in chapter 1, verse 8. Look back there to chapter 1, verse 8. He says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." That's the first lecture. Then look at chapter 2, verse 1. It begins the exact same way. "My son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you." Then look at chapter 3, verse 1. "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments." Now we come to chapter 4. Same thing. "My son, hear, my sons, the instructions of a father." Solomon begins this lecture the same way he begins the other lectures. Except notice, sons is plural. In all the previous lectures, the son has been singular, but now he's appealing to his sons. There's a wider audience. There's more children. It's as if he's got all of his children around him, his sons all around him. There's a family setting with a number of children present. And he says, "Hear, O sons, the instructions of a father. Hear." This is the great Jewish word Shema from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And Solomon has more in mind here than just make sure your eardrums are in working order. That's not what he's getting at. He's actually saying, "Sons, listen to me. But not just hear the words that I'm saying. I want you to take what I'm saying, and I want you to impress it upon your hearts. And I want you to be characterized by these things, and I want you to be known by these things, and I want you to receive these instructions, and I want you to put them into practice, and I want you to obey the very things that you're hearing me teach you." Look at the second part of verse 1. He says, "And give attention that you may gain understanding." Pay careful attention to what I'm telling you. And if you do, you're going to gain understanding. You're going to gain discernment. Then verse 2, look what he says. "For I give you sound teaching." One version actually says, "I give you good doctrine." "I give you sound learning." One version actually says, "For good learning I have given you." This is the idea. Solomon has instructed his son in sound doctrine. He has given his son robust teaching. He has given his son the stuff that makes life successful. Rich, robust, theological realities. This is what Solomon has passed on to his son. And so he says at the end of verse 2, "Do not abandon my instruction. I've given you the best of what I could give you, son. I've given you the meat of God's word. Don't abandon it." By the way, parents, this is what you need to do for your kids. Parents, this is what you need to be able to say to your children. Verse 2, "I give you sound teaching." Dads and moms, can you say that to your kids? Can you look them in the eyes and can you tell them, "I have given you sound instruction"? Not just, "I've told you some Bible stories." Not just, "You memorized a couple verses." But "I have faithfully, I have diligently, I have systematically, I have consistently given you sound doctrine." Parents, it's critical that we're the ones that can be able to say that to our kids. And dads, you need to be the one that champions that in your home. You need to be the one that are anchoring your children in the meat of God's word. You need to give them doctrinal truths. You need to give them doctrinal realities. This is what it means to be a part of a godly home, a home that is passing on the tradition of wisdom. You are anchoring your kids' hearts in sound theology. Not done this perfectly in our home by any means, but over the last number of years with our kids, we've tried to do this. We've tried to walk through doctrinal issues. We've tried to think through theological issues. I remember even taking my boys through something called drive-by theology, and just listening week after week after week, theology explained. That's what we do. That's the mark of a godly home. And by the way, kids, listen up, kids. If you're in a home where mom and dad are doing this, listen. Listen to them. Pay attention to what they are teaching you. Your mom and your dad, if they love Christ and they love his word, this is what they're going to be doing with you. They are going to be doing this kind of exercise where they are imparting to you sound teaching and sound doctrine. Listen to them. Pay attention to what they're teaching you. Well, in order to impress upon us the importance of this wisdom, Solomon does two things here. I want to show you 2 points. The first one is a fatherly appeal to wisdom modeled. And then the second thing I want to show you is a fatherly appeal to wisdom replicated. Solomon does something very interesting. In verses 3 to 9, Solomon actually goes back to his own upbringing. He tells us what it was like to live in the house with David as his father. And he's going to tell us what that was like, the dynamics there, the things he heard from David. And then he's going to turn around and he's going to appeal to his son with the same things that he heard his dad say, exhorting him to pursue wisdom. So I want to show you 2 points. Number one, a fatherly appeal to wisdom modeled. And then number two, a fatherly appeal to wisdom replicated. Let's look at the first point. Verses 3 through 9 is a fatherly appeal to wisdom model. And as I said, Solomon is going to rehearse now for us and for his son what it was like for him to grow up with David and Bathsheba as mom and dad. He remembers. Notice verse 3. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me. This is fascinating. We have 3 generations represented here. We have Solomon remembering what it was like to be parented by David, and Solomon, who is now shepherding his son, Rehoboam. 3 generations where there is a cycle of wisdom that is being passed on from generation to generation in this home. And this is the way it was supposed to occur in Israel. This is the way it's supposed to occur today in your homes within godly families. This is the exercise that ought to be taking place. He says, verse 3, when I was a son to my father, tender and the only sight in the son of my mother. He remembers back to a time when it was just him and his parents. You remember the story. David saw Bathsheba bathing on the top of a roof. He wanted to pursue her. He engaged in adultery. He had her husband Uriah killed. There was a child that was conceived as a result of that who died soon after birth. And then 2 Samuel chapter 12 tells us that David and his wife Bathsheba had another child soon after that. And that child was Solomon. He was the first of many children. He had at least 3 brothers, we know after that. But Solomon is going back to a time where he is remembering what it was like to live in the home with David and Bathsheba as his mom and his dad, and it was just him and them. And he's remembering what it was like. He's not doing this just for nostalgia. He's not doing this just to reminisce on some good times in their home. No, Solomon's point in recollecting what it was like to live under David and Bathsheba, he's doing that so he establishes for us the family tradition of wisdom. He's going to go back to his own upbringing, to his own heritage, to his own life being raised by his parents, and he's going to establish the fact that this is what God expects. This is what David did for me. Son, this is what Grandpa did for me. This is what he taught me. This is what I'm teaching you. This is what he believed. This is what I believe. This is what he lived. This is what I live. Now we're exhorting you to do the same thing, son. This is what you need to embrace. You need to embrace the same things Grandpa embraced and taught me and lived out. This is the godly heritage that has been passed on from me, and now it is the godly heritage that I'm passing on to you. Notice verses 4 to 9 are in quotes. Notice that there is a quote around the first part of the conversation in verse 4 that extends all the way down to verse 9. Those are all David's words. And so for just a moment, I want to take you into the home of David and Bathsheba. And we get to eavesdrop this morning for just a few moments on what it was like to have David as your dad. We get to listen in on a father-son conversation. We get to eavesdrop. We get to kind of get a little behind-the-scenes view of what was going on in that home. And as we do this, I want you to ask yourself the question, parents, are you having conversations like this? Dads, are you having conversations like this with your children? Let me read the whole quote, and then we're going to come back and look at it. Look at verse 4. Then he taught me and said to me, "Let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you." The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. And with all your acquiring, get understanding. Prize her, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a garland of grace, and she will present you with a crown of beauty. Notice all the verbs. Notice all the exhortations. Hold fast, keep, acquire, do not forget, do not turn away, do not forsake, love, acquire, get, prize. Do you see the terms he's using here? These are not suggestions. These are a father's exhortations to his son. You must. You have to live this way. You have to embrace what I'm teaching you. You have to treasure what I am teaching you. These are not just things that you could or could not do. No, these are absolute firm commands where Solomon is exhorted by David to wholeheartedly embrace what Dad has given him. So let's look at these just briefly. Let's go back and look at each one of these phrases. Verse 4, he taught me and said to me, "Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments and live." David said to Solomon, cling to what I'm telling you. Cling to it. Treasure it. Don't let go of it. Hold fast to it because your life depends on it. Your spiritual existence depends upon how well you hold fast to the things that I'm teaching you. Verse 5, acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. That word acquire occurs twice there. It actually is the word that means to buy or to purchase. And the idea here is no matter what the cost is, no matter what you need to pay, no matter what it's going to cost you, whatever effort you need to put into it, at all cost, get wisdom. Acquire it, obtain it, get it. It doesn't matter what you need to do. It doesn't matter what it costs you. You have to get wisdom. This is the terminology. We're going to see it again in verse 7, the same word, acquire. And so he's telling him, make sure you get this. And once you get it, don't turn away from it. Hang on to it. Hold it tightly. Live by it for the rest of your days, Solomon. Then verse 6, do not forsake her. And she will guard you, love her, and she will watch over you. Don't reject her. Hold firmly to this wisdom, love her. And notice the effects of this. She will guard you, and she will watch over you. He knows, David does, that there is protection within the life of wisdom. By the way, did you notice here that Solomon or David is warning his son about the unreliability of his own heart? It will guard you. It will protect you. It will watch over you. What? From outside distractions and threats, yes, but also from inside threats that arise from our own sinful desires. David understands by his own practice the unreliability of his own heart. We need to hear that today because how often don't parents tell their kids to follow their hearts? That is some of the worst advice you could give your child. Don't tell your kid to follow their heart. please. Don't tell them to just go and follow whatever inclinations and desires they have, because the heart is wicked and deceitful. That is poor parenting if you tell your child to go and just follow their dreams and follow their heart. Solomon is told by David that it's wisdom that protects him from his own heart. It's wisdom that guards his own heart. It's as if David is saying, you think you don't need to pay careful attention to this, but trust me, you do. You may think you know better at times, but you don't, Solomon, so pay attention to what I'm telling you, not what your heart is telling you, not what you're desiring, not what your friends are telling you. Pay attention to what wisdom tells you to do. Verse 7, the beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, and with all your acquiring, get understanding. This is kind of the pinnacle of David's advice to Solomon. Notice the first part of verse 7, the beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, or maybe a better translation is the primary thing is wisdom, so get wisdom. Another version says, wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. New King James says, wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. One literal translation says, the first thing is wisdom, so get wisdom. You get the idea. The single most important thing that you and I can pursue in this life is God's wisdom, period. More important than anything you crave, more important than anything you work for, more important than anything you desire, more important than anything the world says is important is this. Wisdom is the primary thing. So David is exhorting his son. There's nothing more important than this. Look back in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 to 15. We looked at this a few weeks ago, but notice again back in Proverbs 3 just how Solomon explains just the incredible benefit and value of wisdom. Notice Proverbs 3, verse 13. He says, how blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding, for her profit is better than the profit of silver and her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Not all the money in the world, not all the fame in the world, not all the diplomas or degrees, not all the money you could gather, not the biggest nest egg you could accumulate approximates the value of wisdom. Get it. Make it your supreme pursuit. Sell off everything you have, if you have to get wisdom and live by God's principles, resolve to get it at whatever cost. You prize it and you cherish it and you treasure it and you commit yourself to it. This is what David told Solomon over and over and over again. Notice verses 8 and 9. Prize her and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a garland of grace, and she will present you with a crown of beauty. David uses here metaphors of distinction and honor, and he uses various descriptive terms to communicate just the importance of how critical wisdom is in our life. It will exalt us. It will honor us. It will place a garland of grace on your head and a crown of beauty upon you. Those are terms meant to reflect the beauty and the wonder and the splendor and the attractiveness of a life that is crowned by wisdom. These are the things that David said to his son. This is what it was like to grow up in the home of David and Bathsheba. You say, well, he was kind of a mess at times, wasn't he? Of course he was. At least 8 wives David had. Adulterer. Murderer. Yep. But he knew his responsibilities. He knew how critical this was for his home. He knew how essential this was to the passing on and the tradition of wisdom, and he faithfully taught Solomon to walk in God's ways. And you wonder why Solomon chose what he chose when God came to him and said, you can have anything you want? Does that make sense now why he chose what he chose? 1 Kings chapter 3, God approaches Solomon as he's about to embrace his role as king and start his rule as king, and God says to him, I'll give you anything you want. And what's the first thing that comes to Solomon's mind? Wisdom. Why? Because it's all he heard day after day, year after year, being raised under David. You see what David's doing? David was not trying to control his son's behavior as much as he was trying to capture his son's heart. He wasn't trying to embrace behavior modification with his son, which is what so often what parents try to do today. They try to modify their children's behavior. They try to direct and control them and make them do things or not make them do things. And David had a different approach. David understood the critical importance of the heart. And so he's trying to capture his son's heart, and he's trying to show him just how critical it is for Solomon himself to embrace wisdom so that his heart will then direct his life and his choices. All kinds of implications we could draw from this. Let me just draw a few for you. The first one would be just you personally. Do you prize wisdom more than anything else? Do you cherish the book that you hold in your hands more than anything you cherish? Do you prize the fact that I have a book in my hands that enables me to understand God and his ways, and I can think his thoughts after him, and I can view all of life from God's perspective because he has revealed his wisdom to me? Do you see that supreme value in your life? And more importantly, does it show up in how you live and how much you cherish his word? Are you putting yourself in the way of this wisdom? Are you flooding your minds with this truth? Are you frequently absorbing and allowing the truth of God's wisdom to permeate your mind and your heart so that now you begin to think God's thoughts after him? That's what David was doing with Solomon. Are you doing it with yourself? Kids, let me talk to you young people for just a minute. You, as young people, I presume, are being raised in a home where your parents see this value. Are you listening to them? Listen, I remember what it was like to be a teenager. I was remembering what it was like even this week as I was working through this and just thinking about the fact that I thought at a point in my life my parents didn't know anything. And I think it was Mark Twain, who said, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years. Kids, your parents know some things you don't know. And some of you are in the teen years where you're at the point where you're thinking mom and dad don't know anything. They do. And you need to listen to them. And you need to allow them to instruct you. You need to allow them to impress upon your hearts the importance of wisdom. Kids, are you doing that? Don't be the rebellious teenager who says, I don't want to listen to anything you have to say. Let them instruct you in the ways of God's wisdom. Dads, I want to talk to you for a minute. I mentioned it in the introduction, and I alluded to it earlier, but dads, never underestimate the privilege and the responsibility you have of impressing God's wisdom upon the hearts of your children. You have a massive obligation, but you have a massive privilege as well. This is how God has designed your home to operate. For you to be having the kind of conversations that David had with Solomon and Solomon has with his son, this ought to be normal MO in your family. This is how your family ought to operate. You ought to be having regular conversations around the things of the Lord with your kids, whether it's formal or informal. In fact, don't for a moment just think that they're going to pick this up by osmosis. Don't think for a moment because they go to church or youth group or hang out with some Christian friends that this is automatically going to happen. Assume that it's not, and take it upon yourself, dads, to be the ones who impress these realities upon the hearts of your kids. There's no substitute for dads who systematically and regularly instruct their kids. Do you view your home that way? Do you know your home is the most important hall of learning there is in this country? Not schools, not universities. Your home is the single most important place where your kids are going to learn these principles. I was reading a fascinating article, I think it was last week, entitled "The Cultural Consequences When Fathers Abandoned Children." Now, before I mention what this article is about, let me just say to you single moms, you have a wonderful privilege to do this thing with your kids as well. Just because you may be a single mom without a father figure in the home does not mean that suddenly everything's going to fall apart and your kids are going to turn out horrible. That is not at all what I want to communicate. If you're a single mom here, know that God is faithful and he will sustain you in the midst of that. So let me just preface what I'm going to read with those comments. God is faithful to make up the difference, and God is faithful to bless your efforts as a single mom to sustain your children in the ways of wisdom. But the article I was reading was an insightful observation about how much of what is taking place in our society today is likely the result of generations of fatherlessness. Let me read a little bit. "What I see are large numbers of people across the nation who have something in common beyond their congregational cause du jour. They did not have the stability of the healthy and functional family that all children deserve, most likely due to the lack of a father or an effective father in their home. Rarely is the lack of fatherhood more evident than during the social entropy of urban civil unrest," end quote. In other words, why are there people rioting? Why are there people looting? This author makes the observation that it might just be that many of them, if not most of them, did not have a father figure in their life who was faithfully teaching them the ways of wisdom. He goes on to give some interesting statistics. Between 2014 and 2018, the share of families headed by single parents was 75% among African-American families, 58% among Hispanic families, 37% among white families, and 21% among Asian families. According to the Census Bureau, 20 million children live without a father in the home. Among children who were raised in the post-war generation, 88% grew up with two biological parents who were married to each other, whereas today only 68% will spend their entire childhood in an intact family. And the article went on to chronicle some of the effects of this: 4 times greater risk of poverty, more likely to have behavioral problems, more likely to go to prison, more likely to commit crime, 7 times more likely to become pregnant as a teen, more likely to face abuse and neglect, more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, 2 times more likely to suffer obesity, and 2 times more likely to drop out of high school. The point of the article is there is a fatherless factor in our country today. Want to know why we're at where we're at? In many cases, it's because dads have dropped the ball. Dads are not present in the home, even physically. And at the same time, that just because there is a father in the home doesn't automatically guarantee that this is happening. So let me be very clear about this. Just because there's a dad in the home doesn't guarantee that wisdom is going to be passed on, even with homes with fathers. Often Bible reading and prayer and discussion of the things of the Lord and talking about spiritual things is not present. So, dads, you understand how important this is? You moms as well, moms, single moms, you have the same responsibility. Do you understand how critical this is, that we're passing the baton of God's wisdom on to the next generation in our homes? So teach them what wisdom is. Press into their hearts to the importance of treasuring this wisdom. Model for them the joy of living according to God's wisdom. Show them it's a joy, not a chore. Make sure that you go for their hearts and steer their appetites to the Creator so that they themselves come to embrace Christ and live by His wisdom. So this is what Solomon grew up with. A dad and a mom who did these things perfectly, not a chance. And you don't have to be perfect at this. This is a fatherly appeal to wisdom modeled. This is what David did for his son. This is what Solomon grew up with. And now Solomon, the son, is the father. Now the tables have been turned. Dad now is Solomon, and he's having the same conversations with his son. So let me take you to point number two. It's a fatherly appeal to wisdom replicated. A fatherly appeal to wisdom replicated, because the things that David did for Solomon, Solomon's now going to do for his son and instruct his son in these ways. And this is what we see in verses 10 through 19. I want you to notice there's a breakdown in the way this occurs. Verses 10 to 13, Solomon's going to describe the way of wisdom to pursue. And then verses 14 to 17 is the way of wickedness to avoid. So he's on the one hand going to show his son the things he needs to pursue, and then on the other hand, he's going to show him the life of folly that needs to be avoided. So here's lecture number 5, starting in verse 10. Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. He begins it the same way he begins these other lectures. Hear, my son, accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. You will be blessed. God will honor you. He will take care of you. He will bring blessing to your home and to your family. Then notice verses 11 and 12. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, you will not stumble. Notice verse 11. I have directed you in the way of wisdom, and I have led you in upright paths. Parents, can you say that? Will your kids one day reminisce and think back on what it was like to be raised in your home? And will they remember those kind of conversations where you directed them in the way of wisdom and you led them in the upright paths? Verse 12 says, when you walk, your steps will not be impeded, and if you run, you will not stumble. This would have been very obvious to those that lived in that day. That region was full of craggy hills and rocky cliffs and deep gullies and places where you could actually fall and get easily hurt. It wasn't easy walking. And in places where there were hidden areas, there were animals, there were people who could come and attack you. And so Solomon's point is, metaphorically, the way of wisdom is not like that. It's not full of pitfalls. It's not full of treacherous walking. The way of wisdom is smooth. You're not going to stumble. Your steps are not going to be impeded. So verse 13. Take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. Solomon now turns to his son and says, son, grab onto this. Grandpa taught me. I'm teaching you. You teach your son. Grab on. And once you grab onto this, don't let go. And notice the last phrase of verse 13. For she is your life. She's your life. Do you realize how critical knowing God and His ways are to your life? It is your life. There's no true life outside of it. There's no true existence outside of it. This is your life. This is what preserves you spiritually. This is what keeps you honoring the Lord. This is what keeps you on the path that keeps you from stumbling. This is what keeps you following Christ all your days. This is your life, His wisdom. Do you see God's wisdom as your life? Job did. Job 23, verse 12. I have not departed from the command of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Can you say that? I consider God's words as more essential to me than food. As our stomachs rumble, waiting for lunch. Jeremiah believed this. Jeremiah 15, verse 16, your words were found and I ate them, and your words became for me a joy and a delight of my heart. Can you say that? Can you say that the words of God, the truth of God, his wisdom is a delight to my heart? Jesus believed this. Matthew 4, verse 4, he says, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. God's wisdom is your life. Without it, you don't live spiritually. You might be thinking, well, good night, Todd. You keep saying the same thing over and over and over again. This is message number 10, and you just keep saying the same thing. Yep. So does Solomon. So it's okay. And that tells us something. It tells us that learning requires repetition. We need to keep hearing this over and over and over again, because let's be honest with ourselves and let's just face it. Often we're still tempted to think that sin pays off. We still think that the way of the world and the way of the things around us and the sin that our heart longs for, we are still tempted to at times believe that that's going to pay off for us. That there's something in it for us. There's some satisfaction in it for us. And Solomon keeps hammering away over and over and over again. It will never pay off. It will never satisfy. It's never worth it. Even in that moment when your heart is craving for some sinful satisfaction, it's not worth it. Ever. It's your life. Learning requires repetition. So Solomon, having heard for years from dad, David, about the importance of wisdom, now is passing that same baton onto his children, the importance of raising them to know God's wisdom. And on the one hand, he's got to point them in the right direction. And on the other hand, he's got to warn them against the wrong direction, which is what he does in verses 14 to 17. Look what he does here in verses 14 to 17. He warns them about the dangers of wickedness and the ways of the world. He warns them about the dangers of bad company. He warns them about the dangers of bad influences. He warns them about the serious effect of hanging out and associating with bad people. This is important because sometimes sin sounds really fun. And sometimes people will come along and they'll entice you to do something. And there's something in your heart that says, yeah, you know what? That sounds kind of adventurous. I think I might want to do that. I shouldn't do it, but I want to do it. There are circumstances and there are people in your life that will present themselves to you, enticing you to do things that you shouldn't. And you've got to have your mind made up ahead of time about whether you're going to engage in that and whether you're going to go with those kind of people. Look at verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it and pass on. Notice the urgency here. These are not suggestions. Again, these are admonitions and exhortations, six of them. Do not enter. Do not proceed. Avoid. Do not pass by it. Turn away. Pass on. Do you think he could have used any stronger terms here? Don't even go near those kind of people. Avoid it at all costs. It will never pay off. Why? Verse 16 and 17. For they cannot sleep unless they do evil, and they are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble, for they eat the bread of wickedness and they drink the wine of violence. Solomon says there will be some people in your life who can't sleep until they commit wickedness. Most people can't sleep if they're engaged in wickedness. But there are some people who can't sleep unless they commit wickedness. Until they've hurt someone, until they've done something sinful, then they can sleep. Notice verse 17. It's so much a part of them that they eat the bread of wickedness and they drink the wine of violence. It's their food. It's what they eat. It's what they embrace. They're so wicked. They actually live their lives for this. Solomon says to his son, avoid those people. Avoid those circumstances. Run hard and run fast away from it. Parents, are you teaching your kids this? Are you teaching your kids the folly of sin? Are you teaching them that sin never pays off? Are you teaching them that there are wicked, evil people in this world and that we live in a world of sin? And are you teaching them that those things are situations that have to be avoided? You have to instruct them in this. You have to teach them about the folly of sinfulness and the fact that it never pays off, it's never worth it, and it never works out well. You constantly have to be warning your kids, not just instructing them about the things they should do, but warning them against the things that this world is going to throw at them. What's the point? Here's the summary, verses 18 and 19. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. Two paths, two choices, two roads. Which one are you on? There's one way, the way of the righteous, verse 18, that is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the righteous is like the dawn that breaks through the morning and the rays of sun begin to illuminate the earth, and suddenly throughout the course of the morning, it arrives that full, bright light in the middle of the day. That's what the righteous are like. That's what your life will be like. That's what your way will be like. That's the direction of your paths. They will be fully illuminated and blessed by the Lord. Or, verse 19, the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. Literally, it's like thick darkness, like the intense blackness in the middle of the night. That's what the way of the wicked is like. And you can't see what you're doing or where you're going. And if you're on that path, you will stumble and you will fall. And you will fall eternally. So, which path are you on? And is there a legacy of passing on wisdom in your family? David did it. Solomon did it. We need to do it. So let's not drop the ball on our watch. Let's not drop the ball in our church. Let's be a people who understand the wisdom of God, who love the wisdom of God, who live the wisdom of God, and faithfully pass that on to the next generation. Pray with me. Father, we need to hear these things over and over again. We need to hear these things over and over again because our hearts are fickle. Our hearts do love sin from time to time. We confess at times we crave it because we think it will provide some level of satisfaction. And yet Solomon reminds us how foolish that is. So, Lord, steel us against the ways of the wicked. Steel us against foolishness. Help us to resolve, Father, to love wisdom, to love truth, to love righteousness, to love holiness, to embrace that, to live that. Lord, may that be the trajectory of our church. May that be the trajectory of our homes. Strengthen these parents. Strengthen our families so that the baton of wisdom is passed to our children and to our grandchildren so that you'll be honored and glorified and so that our lives will be blessed. Lord, we thank you for this wonderful, practical instruction. May we put it into practice this week. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
You've been listening to a sermon by Pastor Todd Dykstra, teaching pastor of Maranatha Bible Church in Comstock Park, Michigan, where we exist to display God's glory, declare God's truth, delight in God's Son, and disciple God's people. No part of this digital file may be reproduced or distributed without prior written consent. For permission, go to mbcmi.org.